Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, where wealth strategies and investment wisdom collide, featuring your distinguished host and certified financial planner, Bart Zandbergen.
Welcome to the Zandbergen Report, a showcase for wealth strategies and investment wisdom that's essential for our revolving world. Today, Paul, it's not wealth strategies.
It's something wealthier than that. It's the wealth of the soul.
Wealth of the soul.
I like that.
Very, very good. And it may actually could even call it wisdom of the soul.
Yeah, I
like
that too.
Maybe wisdom by the end.
Well, everybody, we're so excited to be here. We have a full house, and today is our annual holiday wine pairing show.
Ooh.
So in order to help with this show, we have got a full crew.
And you know, wait, can I just open the door a little bit, because there's a lot of people out there. I'm gonna see, they're all...
We need a full breakdown here for sure.
That's right. So we have, of course, in studio our engineer, Paul. We have my partner in crime, Letitia Burbaum. And
hey,
our once-a-year annual show-up only for the wine tasting show.
I mean, of course, every now and again, a publicist needs a glass of wine.
That's right.
When you say, hey, Paula, I have wine, I say, what time? And I'm there.
Can I tell you something funny here before we start here? So I was a publicist for 20 years, celebrities, whatnot. And only thing you could get a publicist to show up for was free food, free booth.
It's
you
terrible.
Say free food.
They get a bad rep.
They will show up anywhere. Free food, free booth.
Terrible. Terrible. That's old generation. This is new generation, Paul. New generation.
When the movie studios wanted to get it to come out, it was free booze and free food.
Sterling,
we showed up.
PR does things differently.
Okay. All right.
However, I will never miss this annual wine tasting. Will not happen.
Perfect. All right. Let's get this show rolling. We have got wine here on the table. It is open.
Walk us through what you got first. Give a little plug to everybody here, and then you can start talking about
it. So, you know what? I am going to plug those as we get into
all right.
Because there's a method to my
method. There's a method,
all
right. So tell us first a little background. For those who've been living under a rock, you know a little bit about wine.
Yeah, I would say so.
More than a little bit.
So I have had some training.
Real training, serious training.
Some would call it excessive or obsessive training.
Yes.
But at the end, I have accomplished something called a certified sommelier, and that is through an organization called the Court of Masters. There are technically four levels. There's a level one, which just gives you some basic training. The level two, you're then able to call yourself a certified sommelier. And then there's levels three and four, an advanced, and then a master, which if anyone has seen the documentary called SOMM, S-O-M-M, it actually tracks a number of individuals as on their path to becoming master sommeliers, of which the current count, I think, is 199 in the entire world.
That's what
I
said, 200,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. In the entire world. So why is this so hard, even at a certified level, to get certified? What is so? This isn't just a weekend course you take somewhere here.
Correct. This was years of training, so much so that I don't remember if I've shared this online before, but on the last day, there was 2 days left of my training, and so I had tests scheduled for Monday. And I had, first of all, let me back up to say what you need to do in order to pass the test is you have to know basically every wine in the world, where it's from.
Like really, I mean seriously, yeah.
The history of wine. You need to be able to taste the wine and determine what the wine is. And then you have to be able to properly serve wine.
And do you do blind tastings like they do at the master level? Do they just give you wine and you have to know what that is and spot on what year, where it comes from, everything?
Yes, 8 in the morning. So
8 in the morning, right?
Yeah,
wow.
First thing.
Okay.
And how many do they give you at the certified? I know it gets tougher as you go up, but even at a certified level, how many do they present you?
So one white, one red.
And I'm just going to bring you a white wine, and you got to know not only varietal, it's a Chardonnay or whatever.
Correct.
And you got to know winery.
You have to know region.
Region, okay.
And then vintage.
Vintage. So meaning what year, like is this an 88 or something?
Correct.
Because it does vary that much. Now, how in the world could any of us mere mortals ever hope to tell? I could tell it's a Chardonnay. I might even have some little more knowledge than that, but I wouldn't know if it's an 88 or a 98 or whatever. I know there's differences, but I'm not that sophisticated to tell.
Yeah, so I'm not going to tell you all of my secrets, but what I will say, there is a process, and the Court of Masters teaches you, it's called deductive tasting. So you start out very high level if you're looking at a funnel, and you would say, okay, obviously, is it red or white? It's white.
Yeah.
So now we're going down the white path. And then you would say, From there's a visual part, and then there's a smell part, and then there's a taste part. Mm-hmm. And through the deductive tasting process, you can, it's process of elimination. And the first big delimiter is this old world or is this new world? Mm. And by old world, just to make it simple, it's Europe, and new world is, to make it simple, anything but Europe. So right. Everything, North America, Australia, South Africa.
That's a big world, though. I mean, how many wineries in California alone? It's got to be thousands?
Probably close to 1,000. There's AVAs, which are American vinticular areas. There was a lot. In preparation for that, in the last couple of days, final studies are on, and I used our bedroom and our bed as my kind of my work zone. So I had maps laid out, iPads, flashcards, everything going on. And this is slightly embarrassing, but also very funny. At least it was funny for me, not so much for my wife. As she came in at 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, my test was the next morning, and she had like tears running down her eyes. And I'm like, honey, what's wrong? And now, remember, I'd been up since like 5 a.m, and I'd been studying since. And she said, are you having an affair?
Because oh, no. Only that could explain this kind of obsession.
Oh, yeah.
This behavior.
Yeah.
So I said, can I get back to you tomorrow after?
Can we argue tomorrow after I...
Current affair is with studying.
Yeah.
Outside
yeah.
of that, no.
So then wake up the next morning. This particular, once a year they hold it at the Montage in Laguna Beach, which is near where we live. And one of the things that I never do in test taking is I stop studying around 6 o'clock the night before, and I don't do anything more. It's time to relax and just let everything sink in.
Right.
So that morning I had decided, I wasn't studying, but I was going to do one last run on wine service. Now, this is from a guy who his entire life has never worked in the service industry.
Have you ever been a waiter? Or?
No waiter, no bar, no host, no nothing. But right. I had practice knowing that this was part of the test.
How to present it and how to pour it and how to carry it, how to open it. And
how to open, pour, communicate, answer questions, serve on the right side properly. So had the glasses on the tray. First thing I did was knock one glass over, knocked over every glass and bottle and preparation. So Tina was great to say, okay, you got that out of your system. You're good now. So
there you go.
That's so good.
Yeah, which was. So that was a grueling. It's an all day. The 8 o'clock is the wine tasting. And then you go from there, small break, and then you go into it's about 200 questions. Essay, multiple choice, etc. of, again, questions about wine in the entire world, small lunch break, and then you break up individually, and there's four master sommeliers around a big room in the Montage, and you then are serving this master sommelier and his three imaginary friends, his or her three imaginary friends, as he dictates what each one is having, and will ask, hey, so-and-so is having this, what do you recommend as an aperitif, and then how about for the salad course, and then we're thinking about having this, and he's having that, all while you're trying to properly open a wine in front of a master sommelier, which is no pressure.
Yeah.
And so what's the pass rate? Pretty low.
It's about 19%, actually.
Oh, One out of five passes assessed after all that.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. So that was a day of celebration to have that to be on. And then when I actually...
Where's the confetti, Paul? You Whee! Have all these great sounds.
What do you think of that, folks? They're still excited out there, yeah.
And about a week later, just to kind of finish up, and I'm going to leave Tina alone, I thought, honey, you know what? What I've kind of been thinking about maybe doing the advanced sommelier.
Oh, no.
She slapped you upside the head. Yeah,
I'm just going to leave it at that.
And I think you should just enjoy this one.
Yeah, I'm clearly not an advanced sommelier at this point. But just to kind of finish up on the training, because sometimes there is some confusion. That's the most, I think, popular or most well-known is the certified sommelier. But the other courses I was taking concurrently, one... Because I'm obsessive compulsive, and two, they were actually really good training to get to my ultimate goal, which was a certified sommelier. One is called the WSET, or Wine Spirits Education Trust.
What's that?
It's located in London, England, and it's a foundation or a university that teaches not only wine, but spirits and all sorts of alcohol history.
Did you go there?
So sadly, I didn't have to go to London. That would have been nice. But there is actually the master sommelier, who was one of the trainers for the Court of Masters, also is in a way up on the WSET. So he was teaching courses that I went in person.
Oh, neat.
So that was very, very helpful. That was a couple of years. I haven't gone through the beginning, intermediate, and advanced, and I finished that. And then just because there was one thing left undone, and it was the certified specialist of wine offered by the Society of Wine Educators.
You needed to get that.
I thought, well, it's one thing left. How can I not?
Right?
Check every box.
When did you do that?
That was about 2 weeks before I sat for the certified sommelier.
Are you kidding me? 2 weeks before?
Yeah.
Well, no wonder Tina thought this. Oh, my gosh.
Because nobody could be that into anything. This has to be a cover for something.
And this is a hobby.
Yeah, hobby.
Oh, my gosh.
And which is so interesting because to date, definitely the certified sommelier, harder than any certification, and Letitia and I share like certified financial planner training and my divorce training and our securities license, all very hard, all which makes us money. To date, not one penny.
Right. It really is an obsession. Right?
Enjoyed 100%. All right. So,
but my favorite part is when we go to an event and they have food, and then you'll say, Tish, you got to try this one. Or we're getting ready to have a meal, and then you go try this with that, and all of a sudden
it comes alive.
The food tastes completely different. It's like magic for me. So
it is
thank you.
it is chemistry after all. It is chemistry of how these things interact with one another. Now, the thing I never asked you before is, so once you pass this, how does anybody know? Do you have a secret handshake? There's a little card.
Ooh, have a publicist. That's what
That's right.
You know, in the military, they have these challenge coins. If you're in the Green Beret or something, you get to pull it out and something here. You know, what is it that they give you? Could I just say I'm a master sommelier?
You have a card, right?
So I have cards that say I'm a certified sommelier. I have a certificate. But other than that, it's a somewhat of a small world. And so of the time when we go places, either with my wife or if I'm with Tish somewhere, they kind of already know. So we kind of get pretty cool treatment.
That's so fun.
So if this career doesn't work out, eventually you can just become a wine master here and travel the world.
Yeah, 27 years of it. Yeah, the financial advisor thing doesn't work out. I've got.
He's not leaving anytime soon, Paul. So don't get too excited. I enjoy this being his side hobby.
That's right.
All right, so
what
I'm pouring now, and there's a reason I'm pouring this now, not only is it would be nice for the holidays, but as my master sommelier told me, this happens to be a Riesling, a dry Riesling.
Okay, I'm going to hold it to the camera so you guys can take a look.
And it happens to be from the Santa Ynez Valley in California. The winemaker is Fess Parker. But a Riesling is what you drink during the day while you're thinking about what you're going to have for dinner,
for
dinner.
So that's your thinking wine.
This is your thinking wine.
Okay, I really like that. I think I might need this in the office when I need to think extra.
All right, so give us the little rundown. First of all, you didn't hold it by the base like so many wine snobs do.
Well, I'm not. Oh,
some people hold it at the base, and then I can't show it on. You don't do that. Do you grab it by the stem and do
it? How do we hold the glass?
It's So the basic thing is you don't, especially white wine, you don't want to hold it by the glass for anyone who's watching, because that will change the temperature of the wine. Obviously, your body's warmer than a chilled white wine.
Heats it up ever so little, right?
Can we also talk about the glasses for a second before you go into the wine?
Wow. Yeah,
because I learned something from you, and I thought that was so fantastic.
Each wine has a glass, really.
On the glasses. No, but can you share a little bit about
I came so close to bringing varietal-specific glasses today.
But I thought you would.
Of course, Tish would call you out.
I came this close, but for two reasons. One, I'm like, they're really going to think I've completely lost my mind.
No.
So that was one reason. That's one reason
You're
I did
very
it.
Thorough.
And the second is I just only had so many shoulders and bags. I didn't
True.
Have to, for four
yeah.
glasses. So I got the most general glass I could. But to that point, being one of the world's largest, not only OCD, but also a big cynic, I thought there is no way.
This is all recorded. This is quite interesting.
Documenting. Keep going.
I thought there was no way a wine would taste different in a different glass, right?
Which I believed you, by the way.
And so I have done now to date four different blindfolded tastings with varietal specific, and every single time the wine tastes better in a glass that's specifically made for that varietal.
And why? Because it focuses the focuses the fragrance, or it allows it to breathe more or less, or whatever, get more or less air.
Yeah, pretty much all. Yeah, all of the above. Each wine has its own different, I don't know, characteristics or parameters.
Like some rack to air better. Some don't want as much air. Some need to open up and breathe, as they say. Some want to be more contained. And
that's right. A fun holiday challenge. I think that you should put that on part of our notes from the show, because I think that would be a great game. Because I literally challenged you, and I didn't think. I'm like, there's just no way that the glass that you put it in is going to make the wine taste any different. And it actually does.
And I think you have a certain brand or certain type of wine glass.
Yeah, it's a certain glass.
So there Riedel are. No. Yeah, Riedel. They're one of the probably the primary providers of the. They may even be the originators of the varietal specific.
Shout out to Riedel. Is it Riedel or Riedel?
A Riedel.
Riedel, okay.
Ooh, I have this at home.
Yeah, so that's there's great. Another. Here's another Riedel story that's related. So have you. So we're getting back to. I'm going to get there. So you hold the glass not by the glass, but by the stem. Some people are by the base. It's personal preference. I like the stem. But you've probably noticed in the last few years that there are stemless glasses.
So, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my wife actually likes those. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will use. So for me personally, I'll use those if there's no other option. I.e., if I have a plastic cup or a stemless, I'll go for the stemless. One of the problems is, of course, there's no stem to hold on to, so you're forced to hold the glass. But at least it's glass, so that part is good. But the.
What about plastic, Bart?
Yeah, plastic. Only.
That's a tough one.
I'd almost rather drink out of the bottle, but I have been known to drink out of a red Solo cup as needed.
It's the holidays. You've seen it all.
Yeah. Anyway, so the origination of the stemless glass is kind of interesting. I learned this at the Riedel specific blind tastings. So I believe it's the generation of the grandson of the Riedel family who created all the Riedel glasses. Moved from Germany, where Riedel was from, double check, yes, Germany. Moved into a New York apartment, had his glasses, tried to fit him in the small cabinets.
And my goodness.
The glasses don't fit. So he goes back.
I need a solution.
Has a solution and creates stemless glasses so they fit in his New York apartment.
Oh my gosh. Of course, because if he goes, if I have a problem, there's more people that also have the same problem.
That makes so much sense.
Yeah,
I always wondered how that came about.
Yeah.
And so then the last thing on glasses, and Paul, you're gonna try the plastic.
Don't do it.
Huh? I'm gonna bring out some plastic for you. No, I just thought in case because I can only drink
a little of this.
I may have to pour out some of these here just as I taste.
Paul, you're not pouring out your wine.
Well, if anybody wants to, I got a little bucket.
So yeah, that's not happening in this crew here.
Okay, I'll drink
it all instead. All
right. So the last thing on. A sparkling wine or champagne, I don't know if you've noticed, but there has been a trend to go away from the tall flutes to more, not quite like the glass we have here, which most people won't be able to see, but these are full glasses, but more like a white wine glass. Again, for the same reasons you said, Paul, it's less for the ambiance and for the visual of the bubbles going up and down, but more for the air inside.
Let's talk about one other thing here. And big argument I always have at holidays: open up the wine, let it breathe. Now just grab it out of the fridge or just yank it and pour it here. Most people just want to pour it, and
you opened them before the show opened.
Yeah,
started.
Got to.
So I almost without exception will open wine, if I can, an hour or so.
An hour.
Oh, wow.
Now, okay. So
what's a good time frame rule of thumb? An hour.
So, we'll go to varietal. We go to how old the wine is. So whites you can open pretty much right before. Younger wines, like especially whites, you can open right before. Older wines, especially reds, will benefit from some air.
Yeah.
And then that goes into also decanting. People have probably heard or seen beautiful decanters that allows air to come in. And again, in a blind tasting, there's a significant taste difference.
But come on now, Paula goes out and parties all the time, so does Leticia. You guys never have been
terrible.
Anywhere. You've never gone anywhere where people didn't just open the wine and start pouring it. Come on. Come on, tell the truth.
I'm sure it happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, most people just open it and pour it.
Yeah, for sure.
They don't prepare it.
So what are we drinking now, Bart?
So this is a dry Riesling. As I mentioned, it's from Santa Ynez Valley, Santa Barbara County. And the origination of Riesling comes from
Germany
or the northern France, Alsace. Mm-hmm. Riesling has a reputation of being very sweet. But they have a full range. There's like six different levels, and this is we're probably on the dry, either the driest or the second level.
And dry means less sweet, right?
Correct.
Less sugar.
Riesling is also next to Champagne, which I didn't bring any today because we focused on it last time, which, as you all know, everyone seems to know, that's my kind of my favorite go-to.
Yeah.
So, by the way, any holidays, anything you want to eat, Champagne can go good. Everything, all day.
But, I have a question for storing it. Can I change it just for 1 second?
Yep.
What would be the temperature that I would want to store this Riesling? Can I just throw it in the fridge? Can I put it on ice?
Yeah, there's some controversy on that. I like my white wines on the cooler side, so I do put them in the regular refrigerator, so I'm getting them down in the 50s, probably.
50s. So it's crisp.
Yeah. Get the full...
Crisper, then? Would make a crisper flavor to it? Or
well, they're...
Like an apple,
they're,
almost, yeah.
Well, this, you'll find with this, you'll probably, you're tasting a little pear, a little bit of apple, more green apple. But the correct temperature is about 65 degrees for white wine to get the full flavor.
Because if you chill it too much, then it closes it up like a flower. It doesn't have the same aroma and fragrance and stuff, right?
Correct.
So we've talked about Fess Parker before, and so I'm just wondering, is there something specific you love about Fess Parker in general?
We got to get Paul a little closer to the mic. Though,
yeah. Hold on here. Fess Parker question. So I was just wondering if there's something that Bart loves about Fess Parker as a winery and how they produce their wines.
Sure.
And while you're doing that, I have a second question, because I was going to ask the same thing. Fess Parker is it's not a super high premium brand, although he's well known in the area. And I think, as you obviously agree, it's more of a... I thought the wines would be unattainable that you would bring in here. That's an attainable wine. That's not the...
Look at you. You think I'm a wine snob?
Yeah, well, because you look at your background. You're only going to drink $500 bottles here and stuff. Yeah,
you drink good wine.
So at the end, it's all personal taste. And to Tisha's point, I drink good wine. And the red wine we have is going to be a higher price point. But to answer multiple questions...
And
so,
I added one more to the same one. It's what's the price point of the Riesling that we're drinking right now?
Yeah, it's about $25, $30.
Okay.
Right, so that's something you could see at High Times or something. Or whatever.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a Riesling. You can find them, but, to be much more than that. It's just not an expensive varietal.
Okay.
So to get to the Fess Parker, that's someplace I've been going to for almost 20 years. And although it does have a celebrity name, they have really, really good quality winemaking. And they focus on areas and the varietals that are near and dear to me, which are more the Burgundy style, which are typically Chardonnay, Pinot Noir. That's kind of their flagship. They also do a great Syrah. Now, that happens to be all in the area. I happen to have another wine. The next wine we're having is from the same area, a different winery.
Can I give you a shocking thing? I'm gonna test. This was done to me early in our show today. I forget how quickly we forget these TV stars, these movie stars. Fess Parker, I grew up with. Bart probably grew up with. I'm a little older, so I remembered the shows that he was on. I'll bet these two young ladies couldn't even tell you what Fess Parker's claim to fame was.
You know, I would love to have an answer for that, and I don't, but I would love to hear it, Paul. Come on,
I'm just shocked. Well, he was Daniel Boone on TV for a million years, the TV series, and before that he played Davy Crockett in all the Disney
stuff. Davy Crockett.
Davy
Crockett. And he passed just a few years ago. He would be at the winery, lovely gentleman. Yeah, in his older days.
How neat. Oh, that has
signing autographs, so great. But his son and grandchildren are the winemakers, and what the heck, he was able to, they do a great job, and their winery is beautiful. So there's a lot of wonderful things about it.
So can I ask another question? So as we're approaching the holidays, my favorite part is not only are we drinking a fantastic wine, but what food would this really complement when we're preparing
our holiday? You've read the show notes here today.
That's my favorite part overall. I want to know what will make this wine better.
If you don't pair it with the right food, and I see this all the time, the wine tastes great, and then they have it with dinner, and it's not so great. The food kills the wine or buries it or whatever, vice versa.
So I think that's all true, but I think there's also, to my earlier point, you're not eating all day, right? So you're going to get to someone's house, and usually we entertain.
My family's house, yeah.
What are you going to drink while you're snacking cheese and crackers? Or what are you drinking while you're waiting to get to dinner?
Yeah.
So That's what I would use Riesling for. That would be your white option for that.
Okay.
I would do that or champagne or sparkling wine to be more technical.
What would be another, like, what's
How about
specific?
Sauvignon? How about Sauvignon Blanc?
Hold on, Paul. I want to be very specific on the wine that we're at. So, like, what are foods that would actually complement it? So, like, you're saying, like, the cheese, the crackers, anything else that would bring out the flavor of this wine?
So, one of the best things about Riesling, much like sparkling wine or champagne, is it's the easiest wine to pair food with. So, it goes
with almost all of them.
Yeah. Vegetarian, white meat, I would probably not do this if I was having a heavy steak. It's not going to be any benefit to that. But as
you're
arriving for Thanksgiving at someone's house and you're looking for something to do or to drink while you're waiting
for Christmas or New Year's.
Or Christmas or New Year's, we have a couple holidays coming up. But I think it's the great kind of a starter for the white option. And we live, it's typically warmer, and on the holidays we typically have nice sunny days. And
For me,
some of my wine choices are based on what the weather is, and if it's warm outside.
It's cool, crisp, and it's refreshing.
Yeah, I never heard that
before. I can see why you factor that in. That makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
Because it's cooler. And
Now, how about some of the other traditional kind of everyday, the Sauvignon Blancs or Viognier or something? You going to pour some of those today, or are those just similar kinds of starter styles?
He's so ready for the next one.
Yeah, he's ready. He's like, hey, when's the next wine coming?
Move this along here.
Are you wanting more of your wine here?
I mean, we poured you more, Paul. What's happening?
Oh, you poured me more of that one? Oh, I can't.
Absolutely. It says feed the producer.
I gotta run the rest of the shows here today.
Feed the producer.
I know. I'm trying to follow directions here.
I was up to the next one here. All right.
So that's the sound of everyone tasting the wine. Okay, so.
What about dinner? What if we're going to jump into like a holiday meal?
All right. If we're talking about. So. We have Thanksgiving just around the corner.
So what if a traditional family's having turkey and stuffing and cranberries?
Mm.
What would I serve at my table that I would get 5 stars from everyone? It would be a great tip. Like maybe, and then what we're going to be drinking today as
Perfect. Well, part of what I brought today does correlate to a Thanksgiving dinner.
Oh, fantastic.
And also correlated to my sommelier test. And I will tell you that although I got the answer right, I did get a little mark that I could have done better from my master sommelier. And I went in to when
I'll bet that drove you crazy too.
He said, I got that right, and then there was an area of improvement, which that's all he focused on.
You will never forget that one little comment on that.
Forget that I got it right.
Most people are like, hooray, I got through the darn thing. He's like, that one little comment. I'll never forget that moment.
I'm so sorry.
So when he asked, as we were going around, he says, this gentleman's going to have a traditional Thanksgiving. I don't know why we had different things, but I said, I qualified by saying I have two options. If your guest would like a white wine, it's a turkey. It's going to be, turkeys are typically buttery-ish, like a Chardonnay, a nice California buttery oak Chardonnay would be great. If, on the other hand, he wants a red option, Pinot Noir would go great because of the cranberries, etc. And right before I got to Pinot Noir, he goes, you only get one. Boom. So I'm like, okay. So I didn't even get like Pinot Noir out.
I like options, so you're okay.
You confuse them, you lose them.
Yeah.
So on my test score, it's like Pinot Noir would have been a better option. Like, tried to tell you. To answer your question. So for the early courses, like maybe everyone does things different. If you have a salad course or charcuterie, Riesling is great. A Sauvignon Blanc, a Viognier, Paul, not many people know of that wine. Mm-hmm. It's a more fragrant white wine.
I like Viogniers.
Originating from the Rhone Valley.
Mm-hmm. What would be one that you can reference?
Both Fess Parker, Demetria have great Viogniers. Okay. Rhone Valley, there's a bunch of varietals. A bunch of winemakers there.
Now we're not talking about the Rhine, which goes through Germany and other places. The Rhone in France.
So I personally am not a huge fan of Viognier. My sister loves it, so when I get them in wine clubs, I just give them to her and we swap out. So she happens to love it. So any of those three. And then when the main course comes, I think I always have both Pinot Noir and Chardonnay on the table.
Yeah.
People can just whatever they want many times.
As a follow-up from our show today, will we have some
will we have
wine?
Discounts for the wine here?
No, not discounts. Will we have actual tangible types of wine and maybe a couple suggestions.
You just want
specifics.
It all spelled out. You just want I'm going to go buy these three wines and I'm a hit.
Sometimes I just want to be told exactly what to do because at the end of the day, I want to have a fantastic dinner and I want to pair it and I want everyone to be super happy. And you have great tips, and I'm always pleased. So it would be fantastic if our listeners that are following you can also follow your tips.
But it depends on the food. So you got to tell them.
That's what I'm saying. If you have this scenario, we can talk about what we're doing today. Like if we were doing turkey cranberry stuffing, what would pair with that? What would be a great white and a great red? And then also what would like this.
That's a great point. I would encourage everyone to check out our Wine Wednesdays on our social posts because we will.
I didn't know that was
a thing. Because we will post.
I'm going to check
a meal. We'll post pairings. We'll post pairing options for.
So you're
going to
do Thanksgiving specifically.
We'll do that first.
What day can I check this out on?
Ladies and gentlemen, Bart has just
Thanksgiving's like in 2 days.
Tailored our social media posting plan. Now we are doing specific meals on Wednesdays. You can check them out.
That's right.
I will let my team know ASAP.
Says our PR.
Got
That's called pivoting.
Yeah. Here we go.
This is a marketing plan.
All right, last question before you move on. Sauvignon Blanc. My wife has moved into. I never thought she'd like Sauvignon Blancs. I don't think she did for a long time. Another really light white. What do you think about Sauvignon Blancs?
So you are talking to a non-Sauvignon Blanc guy.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to qualify that. So Sauvignon Blanc from France is called Sancerre, and that's from a region in France. I actually really do like that. Pretty much anything from the New World, especially, and this is my personal taste, so this is not meant to offend anybody, but from the hotter areas, the warmer areas like California and New Zealand, which is very popular for...
Real popular.
I'm going to give a great positive plug for New Zealand wine in a moment, but for the Sauvignon Blanc, it's just too warm, and it makes a Sauvignon Blanc, and some people like this, but very grassy and bell pepper, and some people love that, and that's just not my style.
And that's what they are up in Sonoma, too. There's lots of Sauvignon Blancs, and they have that grassy, peppery kind of flavor to them. But Australia's huge. That's their...
So I'm just going to slightly correct you. The Sauvignon Blanc is going to be more Napa, and Sonoma's going to be more of the Chardonnays.
Okay, all right. That difference just going over the hill?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Napa's going to be more of your Bordeaux-style wines, and then Sonoma's going to be more of your Burgundy-style wines.
Okay.
But... for those who like it, I wouldn't pair it with the turkey course if you're for Thanksgiving and or if you're having that for any of the other holidays. But for the salad or so forth, for people who like that, it's a great choice.
And you didn't put my other white wine that I used to always get my aunt to drink here, which you're going to throw up when I say because it's really cheap everyday wine, is Pinot Grigio.
Now, there's very good Pinot Grigios. Again, not my style, but there are very good ones. There's another great white wine that, if you hear the name, you're probably going to think the same thing, but it's a very classy, when you find a good one, it's a Chablis.
Yes, right.
Back probably in your parents' day, Paul, that came out of a box.
Yeah, right. That's all they drank,
but
right.
It's true. I mean, that's what my mom drank, Chablis out of a box, and so I was always really against it. But Chablis is the northernmost point of Burgundy and the Burgundy zone. And it's actually a Chardonnay grape, but they don't use any oak in the fermentation. And it's
steel barrels then? How do they avoid the oak?
Steel barrels, and it has more of a gravel kind of texture or tone to it, and it's much more crisp. And if we're traveling to Europe or if we travel to like French Polynesia, which is a French province, they're very available. It's not as available here in California, at least at restaurants. It's a great, great choice.
Okay. All right. So there's your whites, ladies
and
gentlemen.
So it's part of the whites. So now, at least here in studio, we are going to go from, hopefully you'll see the difference in color and in taste. We're going
to Chardonnay.
We're not going to wash out the glasses and change them, everything? Oh, my goodness.
So the best way to wash that is to pour the next wine in it, swirl it, and you can toss it, and then, or slug it.
Wow.
I'll toss it because I got to work all day here today.
Okay. So toss that. So Tissue had a question.
No, go ahead.
So look at the color difference. See how this one is like...
Yeah, there's a big color
difference. I like Chardonnay, so I'm not going to be biased. I'm going to be biased.
How did Chardonnay become the go-to wine?
sorry.
Can't see.
Can I tell you one quick story here while you're pouring?
I'm not pouring very good.
I got a chance to meet the great Emilienko Gurgic, who I believe was the first winemaker to win an award in France.
Wow.
when everybody thought California wines were just box wines and would never compete with the real French. In a blind tasting, he did win back, I think, back in the 70s. And he really perfected this kind of, with lots of what has malolactic acid in it, which makes it have a buttery flavor to it, this buttery Chardonnay that became California's go-to signature. Maybe overdone here.
So, all that is exactly correct, and it's a great winery, and I've seen him. I didn't meet him, but I saw him at the winery a few years ago when I was there. And the whole malolactic fermentation and the heavy oak, which was a big, big California thing, is really starting to kind of reduce.
Yeah, he sort of did it like everybody was just threw it in there, and that's a California wine. And that became the signature California wine, maybe because it was the first to win awards, but heavy oak, heavy malolactic, buttery Chardonnays. Oh my goodness, there's millions of them.
And in what we're drinking now, it does have some, I would say, some butter-esque texture to it, but not certainly not
now?
Heavily.
Oh,
so
wow.
This
wow.
is...
Well, this has a lot of butter. I feel like I'm eating buttered popcorn here. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's not that bad.
It's compared to
a Riesling. Yeah,
right.
Sure. So this is a 2017 Chardonnay by Demetria.
Which is also, one, it's a beautiful winery in the San Ynez, a wonderful view, a great place if you're visiting to have, like, bring a picnic. They're very accommodating there.
Mm-hmm.
And then very similar wines to the Fess Parker, but they actually are doing more in the Rhone as well.
Can Chardonnay grow anywhere? Because they do grow it everywhere in California, or is it better grown in certain types of climates?
It's going to be more in the cooler, so it is grown in San Ynez. It's less grown in Paso Robles, less grown in Napa, more grown in Sonoma, so a little closer to the ocean. Demetria is a relatively new winery. It's a Greek family that came in I think within the last 10 years, and have done a really, really good job. I like this a lot, and I think it would be great with...
What would you pair it with, Bart?
Definitely, this is a Thanksgiving if you're going to have a traditional
turkey. Or buttered popcorn, if you're having buttered popcorn. No.
That actually, the best pairing of a buttery Chardonnay is buttery popcorn.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I was just kidding. All right.
Good job.
I got one.
So, Paul, you can order this when you go to the theaters that serve
wine. Witness.
Amen.
This is,
thank you, Sinopolis.
I have never,
or sneak it in your bag.
I have never heard of this winery before, and this is really spectacular. What kind of price range is this at?
This is in the 30 to 35.
Okay, again,
so
you're not hitting me with. I thought you were going to bring in this unattainable stuff that I can't. What's the?
You haven't outpriced.
Give me a couple of really high end California. I can't think of Hanzel. Is that one?
So Tish and I had one at an event that we bought, maybe somewhat unknowingly. That ended up being like $150 a bottle for a Chardonnay.
It was amazing.
Benedict. That was a Sonoma.
Okay.
That was
a beautiful lady on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Benedict.
Delicious.
I still have a bottle
okay.
or two left. Did you have you?
I have one bottle
yours?
Left. Yeah.
So this is relatively affordable, and this is maybe, you know, for not everybody, but $30 a bottle. That's not out of.
It's really delicious. So what would I pair this with? What kind of food?
For the holiday time, if something.
Holiday, but in general.
Just in general. This also is you don't need a food. I meant to reference this earlier, and that.
You just have to drink. No,
you
didn't.
I meant to reference this to Paul's point about complimenting food. And yes, a lot of wine does complement food, but there are certain wines that I think you can drink without food, i.e. rosé all day. And I think Chardonnay is also a wine that you can drink without having to pair with the food. In my opinion, the California Cabernets, I know a lot of people like to drink them by themselves. I personally cannot drink them without having a big steak or something.
Because it's got a lot of acid in it and it needs
and
something.
And the tannins that kind of, the meat helps to kind of cut it and offset it. But on the other hand.
I could drink this all day. I could drink this.
Okay, well, I've heard a wise tale that you would have whites or a Chardonnay with a fish. Am I wrong?
That is a really good general rule of thumb. Chicken or fish, like a white meat, white wine. Very, very general. But what you accompany the food with or how you prepare the food, like, for instance, I drink Pinot Noir with chicken all the time.
Really?
Okay.
One, because I think we're going to get into Pinot Noirs next, and I'll tell you the different variances of Pinot Noir. But there's a Pinot Noirs that are light enough in body that I think it still goes well with chicken. And or if you do chicken with I don't know, with a pasta sauce or some sort of a red sauce.
I see. Okay.
So they or whatever accompaniments you might have with it.
So could I mix this during the holidays? So say, could I have this during the appetizers then? Again, it's light, snacky. It doesn't really matter really what I'm eating.
I would say yes, as long as it's not too heavily oaked. And I think, unlike Paul, I don't think this is overly buttery. So I could drink this all day.
It just was such a giant contrast from
to the Riesling.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I do, this is maybe because I grew up in that era, the 80s and all this stuff. I love this kind of style wine. I understand why I put California on the map.
Christmas
I love
right now.
This wine. This is my style. And I know it's been overdone, overblown, and they're paring it back, and there are fewer and fewer. But this is, to me, quintessential California wine. Little oak, a little bit of butter, spectacular flavor. I can drink this all day.
So I will, along that, I will share a story that almost qualifies as one of my most embarrassing moments, but I'll just embarrass myself again.
this is a good show.
Yeah. So we've talked about the oak and the butter, and which has been reduced, but at its peak when Chardonnay was really, really buttery, there was a particular group of the population that really enjoyed this kind of wine. And this is a term that I did not create, but my master sommelier, and I actually announced this term while we were doing a client wine dinner, and I didn't realize how many people actually loved the wine, but the term referenced really heavily oaked, buttery Chardonnay, and he said, well, the people who really like that are, they call it cougar crack.
Oh, boy. See, this is why he invited the publicist to the show.
That's
now
right.
I got to PR this situation.
That's right. We'll edit that piece out here.
Really? I just crack. Knew.
Really?
Oh,
it
boy.
It is kind of cougar crack, though. It's the older, wild woman looking for the...
Okay. Wow.
I mean,
that's
what
nice.
Would this be without a little humor, right?
So we're going to move on to the next wine.
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, can I ask, I'll preface this with another quick story from Mike Gergich, the early, one of the two or three famous early California winemakers that put California on the map, Mondavi, Gergich, some others. I met him in a wine tasting. This is like the late 80s, early 90s. He was still alive. And funny little man, a little beret. And so I had some of this really special buttery from some special year, 84 or something or whatever.
It was a good year.
It was a good year. And I'm holding on to this. Yeah. Is that a good year? Is that when you were born?
That's
probably.
When I was born.
And
you're
I'm
welcome.
Drinking wine. And I'm drinking this stuff, and I go up to him because I was so concerned. I didn't have wine cellars. I didn't have controlled wine. You know, how long should I hold this? What I would do? What should I do with this? I bought cases of this stuff because I loved it so much, and I wanted it to last. I said, what should I do, Mike? He said, you must drink it.
Let's move on to red.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, well,
and then let's also talk about maybe other meals, other holiday meals.
So I'm not a giant traditional turkey stuffing kind of fan. I know, it's crazy. But what if we mix it up a little bit? So what if we have like prime rib or tri-tip? What can I mix? What can I serve my guests?
Not the last wine. Because it would get overwhelmed by it.
No. So Bart said I can do that for the appetizers and when people walk in. But what does it look like for the main dish? People are sitting down and they're going to have tri-tip.
It's red, baby. What? You're going to have
some
red.
Well, no, I know it's red. But what red would complement that?
There's part of it's going to be personal taste and part of it's going to be obviously driven by the type of food. So
or enhance the flavor of the food.
Yeah, so like... But that better be a sigh of like
this
pure joy.
This guy knows what he's talking. Yes.
Did you try the Pinot? The Wolf?
Can
Pinot?
I just stop you for 1 second here?
Right?
He's in next to see over there.
I got to tell you, really. So we've had three wines here. Okay, a Sauvignon Blanc, which a Riesling, which I wouldn't have expected Bart to ever drink. I thought he would put his nose up at all Rieslings and that kind of stuff because it's not as sophisticated.
Paul, what am I going to do with you
now? I actually agree with you because I thought the same thing with Bart.
I didn't think he'd go there at all.
But he loves Riesling.
That was really drinkable and really nice.
Yeah.
Then he hit my sweet spot, the old California's buttery Chardonnay. As night and day different as that was from the first one, this is night and day different from that one. This is, talk about this. What makes this so spectacular? Is it more depth of flavor? Is it more, there's more to this. It's got lots of stuff going on here.
Okay, let's clarify what the heck we are even drinking right now.
Walt.
So this is Walt 2000. 2016?
Yeah, 2016.
I never even heard of this one.
I actually think that's 2015.
Yeah, 2015 Pinot Noir.
So what makes this so great? And the other thing I'll say before you launch into that is I went to a Pinot Noir event in Brentwood a year or two ago. And I walked away thinking, I don't know what Pinot Noir is. Some of them are light, some of them are heavy. There isn't a, I know what California Chardonnay tastes like, oaky, buttery. I know what Sauvignon Blanc tastes like. It's light and, grassy or whatever here. I don't know what Pinot Noir tastes like. Are they still experimenting and trying to find what it is, or is it just a freer range of styles?
You are experimenting.
So there is actually a range, and I was referencing that earlier. Pinot Noir has light body, and then it has much full body. I am a big fan of the more full body, which is what we're drinking now. So Walt Winery is the sister of the Hall family wine in Napa. So Walt is in Sonoma. Catherine Hall is married to someone Hall. I forgot.
She could marry me. I'll get divorced. Sorry. This is good.
So her maiden name is Walt. So she named this wine after her her father and her maiden name. So this is the wine they made that comes out of, this particular one's out of Gap's Crown, which is an amazing area for Pinot Noir. So pretty much any...
Gap's Crown, where is that? I've never even heard of it.
That's one of the AVAs, one of the wine areas in Sonoma. Yeah, American Vinticular
which areas. Just to break it down real quickly, the powers that be have broken down, and this is an area because of the soil, because of the climate, because of everything, it grows a tendency. Wines have a certain style or a certain flavor profile that comes out of all this, right?
Right. So there's particular areas that have the more heavy, full body, which is what I really, really like, which is what this is. Other brands that I like are wineries. So Walt is amazing. Costa Brown is great, which is in the same area. Patinet, which Jim Fox is an ex-pro hockey player. He is kind of the brainchild behind it, but it's the same area, so the wine is coming out very, very similar.
You may have changed my mind because I've tried to like Pinot Noirs for years, and they're all over the place, and I have not found one I like. This may be the first one I've ever really
Until
liked.
Until today.
Yeah.
So
you've blown Paul's mind.
You've blown my mind.
Mind blown.
I feel like mind that. Yeah, we need like a cheer.
Yeah, where's the confetti and glitter again? What's happening here?
We need something here. Woo!
Okay, there we go. Blew my mind.
So... And I'll tell you something that's kind of blown my mind. And I promised that I would come back to New Zealand, which is I know is a beautiful place. Tina and I and Tahan are going to go there in about a year to go visit. They're most known for their Sauvignon Blanc, which I've already discussed. However, the South Island of New Zealand is coming out with some amazing Pinot Noirs that are just like what we're drinking
really?
Right now.
I had no idea. Because most of the Sauvignon Blancs are in the North Island. There's two big islands, and most of them are grown in the North Island, which is warmer, and the South is colder.
Yeah.
More
Pinot Noir, if you've, for anyone who has seen the movie Sideways, there's a whole big thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to get back, Tisha, I'm going to go circle back, because Merlot is an amazing wine, and it's going to... answer your question here in a moment.
For food,
but, yeah. But Pinot Noir was a big thing in the movie.
What can I say?
So anyway,
amen. Enough said.
All right.
I like wine.
So we've talked about the kind of the different and bodies. So when it comes to Pinot Noir, there's particular reasons like Gap's Crown, Sonoma. Pretty much anything in Sonoma is going to be more full bodied. Another area, and until New Zealand came around, about the only area that I thought I would like Pinot Noir from, other than this area, was Willamette Valley, Oregon.
I was going to say, that's what they're known for up there, because it's colder and whatnot.
And Chardonnay, so it's more similar to Burgundy in France. So pretty much anywhere you go in the world, they're mimicking the old world.
But I went to the Willamette Valley, and I tasted all these like Sideways, and I've been up to Santa Barbara where they were and stuff, and none of them wowed me. This is maybe the first one I've ever had that really wowed me.
We're here to please, Paul.
Stick with me. Stick with me, kid.
Man.
Oh, my gosh.
You hit me. You said Pinot Noir. I'm like, next.
All right, so let's switch gears a little bit. So, Tish, you asked the question, hey, what if I'm going to do something less traditional, or maybe it's another holiday, we're going to do some like heavy red meat.
I just had a nice dinner. Let's talk about if it was a prime rib or tri-tip.
So you definitely want to go with more full body. I mentioned earlier that I wouldn't drink a cab just by itself, but Cabernet Sauvignon with a big red meat like that would be amazing.
What would be one? like specific one specific that you think I know your taste that you think you would be fantastic.
Yeah, so one of my favorites is in from a California wine is Groth, G R O T H.
Okay. Oh yes.
They
is
make
there
a great
specific
one.
Year?
Yeah, I mean if you want to drink one this year, you want to go at least back to probably 2015 or older.
Okay.
Yeah. And is and it that true that reds have to you got to hold them a while to really have a mature whites or mature quicker?
That's exactly where I was going. Is
yes,
it mature?
That is true. There is depending on where the wine is from, your old world wines will last typically much longer than the Californians. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure the reasons why, but there's European wines that could 30, 40 years old that are still drinking well right now.
Isn't that the tannins though? The tannins sort of wear off over time, and they.
I was going to ask one more question on that. Is there a duration of time that say there's a special wine that I love, 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 and then I just keep it? At what point? Is it too long? How do I know duration of like enjoying it, letting it age, and then it's just met its max?
Part of it's going to be the varietal. So Cabernet Sauvignons have mm-hmm. a long duration. You can keep those longer. But there's a second part of that. There's
when you say
factor.
Duration, sorry, I just want to be more specific. You know me. I like numbers like 7 years.
Or you can hold 10 years or whatever.
Oh, 20, 30, 40 years. Right.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
But it's how you hold it. I think that's where it's going.
Yeah. Thanks, Paul. So it has to be the right temperature. It has to be stored with a I don't
know
if you can see what
wet.
I'm doing, but the cork down so the cork doesn't get corked and the cork doesn't like evaporate or into the wine.
Because then it opens up and then it breaks down and the wine.
Hold on a second. Wait, hold on a second. So if my wine fridge at home is straight, should I have it be tilting down and then having
the cork?
Oh, it has
to. It's got to stay the cork has to stay wet.
Hold on a second. No, wait.
Put a little like thing on the back so it.
Your wine fridge has them flat. It's got a tilt.
Your wine fridge probably has a slight tilt. You
know? Oh, does it? Yeah. I mean, I just
it should.
Have
yeah,
it
every
for
wine
it.
Fridge would have to.
But it's
you don't want the cork to dry out. If the cork dries out, then it breaks down. The air gets in, and it's a mess.
You have to understand, like the listeners and myself, I don't know this. So this is great information. We don't know. So how do you store it? You keep it at a slight degree.
Just so the cork is wet.
The cork is
wet. So it doesn't need
and
much
that
of an
it'll
angle.
Last longer.
Correct. So yeah.
So I have a food question that I'm going to interject here. So I don't eat meat. Haven't for years. I love dairy, but I don't eat dairy. Mm-hmm. So typically during the holidays, I make a pasta dish, and the sauce is made from butternut squash that's pureed with garlic, and I always put in grilled shrimp. Mm. What wine would you put with that?
Yeah,
I feel like it's a Jeopardy now. Ding, ding,
I know.
Ding,
yeah. Ding, I trust no one more ding, than Bart, ding, so ding, I am ding, asking ding, this ding, question ding. To him.
That's
so,
a rough one.
I think a Pinot Noir would be great there. I think a Grenache, which is a red, which is a lighter, less bodied, less full bodied.
There's a wine you never see anywhere, Grenache.
South of France is where it originates from. I think that would
here,
be a great one.
Go to a wine. Go to a restaurant and order a Grenache.
Rosé all day, baby. I think her rosé.
I love it. Now I have my three suggestions for this meal that always debuts
so
this time of year in my household.
Can
this
I be the only
great.
One in the audience who has a little bit of wine knowledge who's shocked that you even bring up the word rosé? Because that was like Chablis. That was my parents' box kind of wine. Rosé, Chablis, all that stuff.
So you need to you got to break out of that old world.
Blue nun, whatever.
Now, trust me.
Eating? Age.
It was not easy for me to come out and say these things.
Yeah, right. It's coming out. Rosé is not something most wine snobs say, oh, please, let's have some rosé. That would be like
actually,
they laugh
no,
at
the
you.
Wine, the wine snobs and the wine professionals
they
these
know.
Days, they know. Yeah.
So the people who are pretending to be wine snobs like me, you say rosé,
Oh, another great one. This is less known. This is in the most southern area of Burgundy, but a Beaujolais. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. Okay.
Yeah. So it's a lighter red, but that would be amazing.
Ooh, where would you find that? What region?
Most southern part of the Burgundy region of France.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I want to make sure we have all these things going on. So, Tish, back to your thing. So I also think a Zinfandel, a red Zinfandel, would be great because it's full-bodied, big, heavy tannins. It will help cut
I'm
through your tri-tip.
I'm a huge red Zinfandel fan. Oh, my gosh. A
so if you don't like
or
it,
red
yeah.
Zin. Oh, my
Paula,
gosh.
Paula, you
I'm
and I are in sync
here.
Okay.
Yeah. Life.
Okay.
So let me stop you for one second here. You hit my favorite of all times. I love Zinfandels. Especially the ones from Northern California that have been around for 100 years, these old vine Zinfandels. And Zinfandel is one of those wines they really cannot determine where it came from, right? Zinfandel the best Miljenko Gergic would tell me was that it's from where, somewhere from what used to be called Yugoslavia. I forgot what, as it's all broken up, what part of Yugoslavia it's from. But is that correct? Zinfandel, as they've tried to chase it back. It appeared as a vine. It was given a name. Prohibition wiped out most of the stuff. They long since lost where the stuff came from. But as they've genetically tested it, Zinfandel seems to go back, at least according to Miljenko Gergic, somewhere in the Yugoslav, in the Balkans.
So there's also something called Primitivo.
Yes, right.
Genetically, they're probably all related somehow, somewhere. Paso Robles here in California is a big producer of Zinfandel. And Los Olivos, Santa Ynez.
Up in the north, where around the gold country and around where the original gold strikes were up in Northern California, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
The last, Tish, hey, how are we doing on time, Paul?
I'm open. We'll stay here all day if you want to stay here. I have a show at 4, so you can go 2 hours if you want to go here today.
All right. So hopefully people are still
hanging in there.
We probably lost
everyone. It's super interesting, though, because I think these are great takeaways, no matter what level you are with
I so appreciate your knowledge and your willingness to come in here. We normally do a half-hour show. We're up to an hour. You take whatever you want here. This is a great time.
All right, so there's another wine that I want to make sure gets the proper credit for the right time, and that is Merlot.
Yes.
So Merlot, ever since the movie... Way to go, Tish. I'm proud of you.
Let's just get a round of applause for Letitia Burbaum right now.
That's one I got to go more.
All right, so Merlot was a great wine until it...
Good.
From a PR standpoint, it wasn't when the movie Sideways came out. Mm-hmm. So there's a movie, and then there was a book. So for those who have seen the movie, they know, and I forgot the lead character's name, but he says, no way, I'm never doing Merlot, and he hates Merlot. And so the country or the world took that as Merlot is a bad wine. Merlot is not a bad wine. It comes from Bordeaux. It's an amazing wine. If you read the book, the reason he doesn't like Merlot is because his ex-wife that left him loved Merlot.
Oh, that's it.
So he always a woman.
Ain't it the truth?
So I am a huge fan. I will go for a Merlot over Cabernet Sauvignon any day, hands down, whenever.
Over a Cabernet
yeah,
Sauvignon?
Yeah, I've seen you choose Merlot.
Which is the classic?
Yeah.
Over a
What's your favorite Merlot?
Dark chocolate.
What?
That's what it's called.
It's called dark chocolate?
Yeah. Where do you find it? Who makes it?
I will be looking for this tomorrow.
Yeah, it's from Napa, and I haven't got it in a while because I always look for
Does it have any sort of chocolate characteristic to it?
Well, Merlot in its characteristics kind of has like a chocolate undertone. Mm-hmm. So it actually is great with chocolate. I would choose that over a cab.
What year?
Gosh, you guys are killing me.
Years
here.
Are tough. Forget about
it.
Year.
We can ask. We feel comfortable.
Years. So I go 2015, 2010 to 2015 probably. And so also Merlot is one of the – everyone has heard of Bordeaux. So right. Bordeaux. So who here thinks that Bordeaux is just Cabernet wine?
I kind of did a little bit.
You guys are just afraid to put your hand up.
I guess I would have thought.
Okay, so here
it's
California,
the French version of Cabernet wine. Yeah.
Yeah. So in California, you have a Cabernet. It's pure Cabernet, right. Which is probably one of the reasons that I don't tend to go straight for that. In France, if you get a Bordeaux wine, it is a combination of Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, and then Cab Franc. And then you have left bank and right bank. I'm getting super like nerdy and technical. So on one side it's more Cabernet based. On the other side it's more Merlot based. I go for more right bank because it's more Merlot based than it is Cabernet.
Right bank of the Seine River is that?
What is right bank and left bank? Banks of the river. Got it.
Banks of the river. Now
Good question, Tish.
Let me throw that.
I wasn't sure either.
If they're not confused enough, the way they categorize wine in Europe, in the old world, is different from the way they categorize it here. They do it by a region, and they do it by varietal. There it is different, right?
So each region has different characteristics. There's like Grand Cru, Premier Cru, and that's in Bordeaux. Burgundy has their that's Burgundy. Bordeaux has theirs. Champagne has theirs. Everyone has... different characterizations, but they do rate them. And when you're in the elite area, like the premier crew, then you know you're going to get the top dollar and so on.
But they don't categorize wine by varietal. They don't just say it's one. I mean, a Bordeaux can be a blend.
It's by right? the, well, again, it depends. In Bordeaux, it's by the village, and then Merlot. I'm sorry, and then in Burgundy.
So let me ask you the really hard question. I've never come up with an answer for this. We're all, if you think you're a wine snob at any sink, you're only going to drink a varietal. I'm going to drink Cabernet. It's 100% Cabernet. But there are blends that you can buy at every winery where the winemaker says, no, a little of this and a little of this, I think it'll be drinkable today and it'll taste better. Are you a blend guy or is that just for the masses?
I go blend any day, hands down. Really? Yeah. Which is more like a Bordeaux. I'll do a blend over. And I just got introduced. I know it's been around for a while, and I'm on a list to be on the allocation Saxum. I'm not trying to plug it in, but I'm kind of plugging. It's out of Paso Robles.
And it there's has, so little that they have to give out a certain amount to certain people?
Correct. Super expensive, but a great, and it's like eight different, like Petit Verdot, Merlot, Zinfandel. It's an amazing, amazing blend.
Can I pre-order a Zinfandel through you? I'm placing my order.
What's the Argentinian varietal that they used to blend so much? Malbec.
Malbec.
Yeah. That's quite often. It's rarely do you see a Malbec on its own, but it seems to be a common. If they are going to blend, why is Malbec a good blending wine? Great.
Some people, my sister and my stepdad, they love Malbec by itself. I don't really care for it. It's more of a cutting wine to me. It's really high in tannin, but it just works great in the blend.
Okay, I have another question. It's completely off your notes question.
Yeah.
I enjoy great salads. And sometimes I have chicken, sometimes I have fish. Rarely I'll have like a steak
right.
with it.
Right.
What would be a wine that I can have at dinner? Now, typically for me, I'll do like a champagne or a Chardonnay, my personal preference. But in general, what will bring out the flavor of like a salad or grains?
Boone's Farm.
Mm. Oh, Paul.
Going back to the Davy.
Another PR situation.
Going back to the Davy Crockett, Daniel Boone analogy. Did they even make Boone's Farm anywhere? I don't think
I don't even know what that is.
No, you don't need to.
I mean, depending on if you want red or white, I mentioned the Beaujolais, which is harder to find here, but if you go to some of the higher-end wine boutiques, a Beaujolais would be great.
Like an everyday salad. I want to have a delicious dinner at home every day. I'm not just talking about the holidays. Something I can enjoy. Yeah. Maybe
so my two go-tos, and I eat a lot like you, my dinners are always a salad, and if I'm going to have wine with dinner, it's either a Pinot Noir or a Chardonnay.
So it depends if you want a white, you would go with a Chardonnay.
If it's hot outside, I'm going to do a Chardonnay. If it's cooler, like we've had the last few days, I go Pinot Noir.
Pinot Noir. Oh, so the weather dictates your choice of wine.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Puts me in the mood.
Huh. Okay, that's really great.
So the last thing on yours, a Syrah. I don't want to spend too much time.
Did we talk about if I were going to have an Italian dinner?
So let's go there. So Syrah, if you're going to have the big, heavy red red meat again, I think that's another kind of with the Zinfandel and the Cabernet.
Yeah.
So if if you're going to have a big Italian, my brother is married to an Italian, and so we go on Christmas Eve. We have she does a big lasagna with all the big red meat.
You're speaking my language.
I know.
Not the meat part, but the lasagna and the cannoli and all that good stuff.
Hey, hello.
I know. Make you a cheesecake. Don't worry about it.
I never asked, is Paul Italiano? I don't even know.
I am half. I'm Sicilian. That's why I'm spicy.
Oh, interestingly enough, I got to stop you for 1 second since we're doing this in slow motion here. We have several Sicilianos that come in and do shows here, and they constantly remind me, Sicilianos are not Italianos.
This is scandalous. Scandalous. Yes, we are.
It is. I mean, it's part of Italy, but this is a different heritage. It has Greek. It has North Africa. This is a different breed of cat than...
Yeah, I see why they say that. I am still Italian. Don't let anyone fool you.
Thank you. All right. So,
any other final tips, Bert? You want to give us some wines?
Yeah. So let's.
You make
so
sure
Italian. So one of my favorite nights of the entire year is Christmas Eve when we go to my sister-in-law's because she is a great Italian cook. She does her lasagna. She'll do big meatballs. That's my one night where I eat like lots of carbs.
I'm good. I'll wait.
More confetti and glitter just happened when you said that.
Hey.
So. And I will also tell you from a sommelier training, like Italy is the Achilles heel, at least for me, and most somms will say the same thing, because there are the regions are really small, and there are hundreds, if not thousands, of varietals and regions. But If you're having like the meatballs and the red meat and all and so forth, so a Barbaresco, a Nebbiola.
I should have brought something for us next time, next year.
And those
year.
Are wines you just do not see. Why do they make it into the common wine? You don't see Nebbiola. You don't see Barosco.
I've never heard of these. Tell us more.
These are obscure varietals only in Italian
I don't know.
Where
are these normal? Can I find them at my local grocery store? Where do I find these wines?
I think it's where we live. It's regional. If you go to just like a supermarket, it's going to be California wines, right? Because we happen to live in a wine region.
My supermarket has everything. It's just broken down by region.
Then go to the Italian region. You'll find those wines there for sure. Those are those are some of the primary. Chianti is another one. Barbarello, Barbaresco, and these are all really big cab zin style wines.
Okay.
Big high tannic. My favorite of all the Italians is called a Super Tuscan. Paul, do you know what a Super Tuscan is?
When you showed me the list here before, it was the only one I'd never heard. I know the Tuscany region of Italy, but I'd never heard of that as a variety, as a style of wine, no.
So I mentioned earlier, I like blends, right? If I'm going to go somewhere, I'm going to go blend. Yeah. So a Super Tuscan takes something that's referred to as international varietals, and that's like your Cab, your Merlot, and so forth. So it's a blend of Cab, Merlot, Zin, and then it brings in also an Italian, like either a Nebbiola or a Chianti or something. And so the blend of that, I think, that's my favorite.
If I'm bringing wine. Spaghetti and meatballs or lasagna.
Now, Super again, Tuscan. Chianti is one of those banished wines. White Zinfandel is
It'll
one.
Bring out the flavor of my wine, of my food.
But these wines Tuscan. That have been okay. that had been trashed through the years because my parents, Chablis, White Zinfandel, and Chianti. Those all sound like cheap, just 60s wines.
No.
So Chianti
doesn't have anything to do with it.
No, I mean, from a period of time when they just made cheap wine. Right.
So Chianti is in the Chablis era where there was a bad marketing of it.
Right.
But the Chianti wine is amazing. And if you get a pure Chianti, it's fantastic.
I would never even try one because I would think it's just cheap wine. Right. Because that was the image I had.
That's what I enjoy being around.
That's what I enjoy.
When I go to places, because I'm always surprised. Because it doesn't necessarily mean you have to get the most expensive wine to pick great flavoring and pairing. Because
I am the
person at the grocery store or wherever I'm shopping, and I will look up the points, and I will say which will match.
You sound like me. That's what I do.
Maximum amount of points.
Do you know how many texts I get from her? Like, hey. Should I get this wine for my dinner tonight?
It's 93 versus 94 points.
And I love having wine that complements the meal. And it doesn't mean it just has to be natural and people enjoy and they're having a great time. And it's just effortless. And so if you have a great wine that pairs with it, and I have learned so much from Barton. That's why I ask these questions, because these are great takeaways for everyone. And if you can enjoy, say you're having great company, and then if your meal is just so
what if
much
it's bad
better,
company? Then just give them some junk.
Yeah. Your meal is so much wine. Better, and then the wine makes the food taste even better, and you're enjoying it even more. It's just an even better experience. And so I am so thankful for you, Bart, always sharing with me, and I'm thankful for you sharing with the audience this information, because it's great. It's great knowledge.
So let me ask, hope it's helpful.
What hostess doesn't want to be the hostess with the mostest?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Come on now, right? Like, we all want to have these incredible parties. So, yes, we're all ears, Bart, whatever you'd like to share.
And so let me ask you the hard question, because this is what I hear a lot when people, I have a little bit of interest in wine. I know a little bit about it. I never went and studied it like Bart did. And I start to tell friends or something, and they're like, oh, you're just one of those wine snobs. I just drink what I like. I said, good. That's really the ultimate compliment here. Drink what you like. And then experiment and expand your horizons. You know, once upon a time when I was a kid in the Midwest, I ate Kraft cheese. That's all I thought was cheese flavor. Then I learned there's a million types of cheese out there, and it expanded my mind. What do you tell people who say at the end of this, this is too snobby, too sophisticated, too much work, too much effort?
No, I don't think any of the things he said are too snobby.
No,
we're
he's
just
done
talking
it. I'm
generality.
Not saying the way he's done it, but wine in general has a connotation, too sophisticated, too complicated, too difficult. I'm just not going to go there.
It is overwhelming. I do have to say,
when you
walk into a store and there's all these regions,
billion
all
wines,
these
billion choices, billion.
You don't know where to go.
So, Paula. So here's what I was going to say before the expert chimed in is put the ego aside and ask questions, which is what we're doing today. We're asking somebody who knows. Don't be afraid to ask a question.
Mm-hmm. And most of these wine, even like Vaughn's Pavilions, they have like sommeliers or like wine experts walking around. They're this is their life. This is what they love to do. And just ask them. And I realized because I once was once overwhelmed as well. It's really tough. But at the end of the day, and I get this more so often, like, it must be so difficult for you to like to choose a wine and how was it? I'm like, at the end of the day, it's like, just pick what you like. And like, so I bought some, couple of very inexpensive and moderate priced wines and one that was more higher priced, but at the end of the day, it's just what we like.
You shocked me what you brought. You brought Fess Parker. I wouldn't think a certified sommelier would ever go near Fess Parker. You brought in wines that you tell me that you like Chablis. You tell me you brought in a dry Riesling. All these are things that usually my perception of wine snobs and what wine experts
We're
would stay away from.
We're blowing your mind, Paul.
You're blowing my mind.
Mind blown. Hashtag. You haven't met on this post.
As our clients might know, boom. My favorite emoji is boom.
We're going to cheers to that. Cheers. Yep. Happy holidays, everyone.
Yes.
So grateful for all these incredible tips. And Paul, we can't do this without you.
Yes, well, Paul. I appreciate that you bring in. I'm willing to open the doors and let. I hope people have stuck with us the whole time because it really is an amazing compendium of choices and stuff. And that's the idea is to open your mind to it, not to overwhelm you and say, oh, I feel stupid. I don't know. I'm going to stay away from it. Jump in. The water's fine.
It's fun. It's fun to explore.
The water's fine, but wine is better.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Bart, for sharing all of your amazing.
This was so much fun. Thanks, everyone, for who has tuned in. And we'll
talk for two more seconds here because I got to get your music up here.
Right. And happy holidays.
Happy
if you
holidays,
have questions,
everyone.
Feel free to send in questions to podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Or you
can tweet
us. You can connect with us on Facebook, DM. Bart Zandbergen. Send us a DM on Instagram. Find Bart Zandbergen or Letitia Burbaum. Otherwise, we'll be back.
Somebody
next
tweeted
week.
In once. What's the number one question people ask you? So you obviously studied at an intense level wine, and you've shown today you know a great deal about it. What do ordinary humans like us ask you?
What's your favorite wine? Honestly.
Right. And what would you say to them? You say champagne is just kind of a go-to thing that works with anything.
Champagne and Burgundy.
We didn't even talk about bubbles today, and that's my favorite. And literally, that's one of my favorites because of you, Bart.
Yeah.
And I've been exposed
to What do you hate? What do you stay away from? You say, no, that's just not me. Not that
I
it's bad,
like we need a whole other podcast on bubbles.
I think we do,
I'm volunteering to come in again.
I will too.
What do you hate? What do you not like?
There's no wine that I hate, but as I mentioned earlier, I don't go for Cabernet Sauvignon Blanc, New World.
And as the world becomes more sophisticated as to wine, the Chinese market is huge. Other areas are opening up. What do you see? What's the hot wine? What's the new wine? What's the wine that's coming that hasn't gotten enough attention? Pinot Noir, maybe? I mean, Pinot Noir is certainly one that has gotten a lot of attention. It's on every wine list, but I just can't tell you what a Pinot Noir tastes like. Sometimes they're light. I can't depend on it. I go and order it. Oh, that's too light. That's too heavy.
Don't you think, Paul? This is preference.
Well, because there's certain styles we've come up with. We know what a Chardonnay, California Chardonnay, is going to taste like, predictably. You know what a Cabernet is going to be big. You know what a Zinfandel is going to taste like. It's got lots of tannins and other things to it here. What's the wine that's coming up? Is there any hot new one that's coming up?
That's a great question. And straight from the publicist, you have to tune into @BartZandbergen on Instagram. Check in on our social media.
I'm trying to get it all in one session here.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Cheers.
Tune in next week for the latest edition of the Zandbergen Report, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Catch up on our recent shows by visiting bartzandbergen.podbean.com. The Zandbergen Report is also available on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Interested in being a featured guest on our show or have a question you'd like to hear us answer? Email podcast@bartzandbergen.com. Bart A. Zandbergen, CFP, and Letitia Burbaum, AIF, are registered investment advisors with Optivest, Inc., and registered representatives with Gramercy Securities, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered by Optivist, Inc. under SEC registration.